With us this evening, Adriana Maree, one of the five South Africans who have made it to the top 100 contestants on Mars One. It's, of course, that project that hopes to send 24 people on a one-way trip to Mars in 2024. Good to see you.
Good to be here, Adriana. Thanks for having me.
So how close are we now to them announcing the 24 people?
Well, we're holding our breath as always. So the phase now is to establish a broadcaster production company to do the documentary series, which is our funding model essentially. So the next round where we go from 100 down to 40, and then the next round from 40 to 24 will form sort of episodes 1 and 2 of the documentary series, Think Like a Scientific Survivor. So that's under discussion to get a broadcaster. And once we have that in place, we'll be going ahead.
So obviously there's a few issues now, you know. Didn't want to kick off with issues, but there's a couple of issues. Well, the first one is obviously funding, as you mentioned. The other one is technology. They literally have to invent certain new technologies in order for you guys to go there and stay there. Am I right?
In fact, not. So as a physicist, I would say the technology is essentially there. What's not there is the funding. Billions of dollars are required to do this, which you may think is an astronomical amount of money, but we spend billions of dollars on various activities on Earth. So I think exploration is certainly one that is justified to spend amounts of money on exploration. But I'd say the psychological issues are certainly something that we will need to do a lot of work on, trying to understand how a team works 200 million kilometers from Earth, how the mind responds to being so far away from what was home. Yeah. But the technology essentially exists. I mean, we've now landed rovers and other missions successfully on the surface of Mars 7 times, which doesn't sound like a lot, but we're getting better at it. That's NASA, who's done all 7 of those landings. But we don't need a quantum computer. We don't need a revolution in propulsion systems. We just need systems engineers to get all the components working together.
What was the thing about the oxygen? Apparently, there was some story about the oxygen, excessive oxygen, which can be problematic.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so the oxygen that we breathe would be created from water. So H2O can be broken into hydrogen and oxygen. That oxygen would be pumped into the pressurized living unit for us to breathe. I mean, the kind of technologies necessary to monitor oxygen levels and to adjust them is certainly no revolution required for that. Systems that monitor oxygen levels in airtight facilities are known to us already. I mean, the International Space Station is, of course, an example of a contained unit where air levels are monitored constantly.
So now there's a chance, it's not 100% chance, but there's a chance you might go. And it's odd to me because you just started a new job this year, hey?
Yes, you got to make the most of your time, whatever planet you're on.
So they know, like, if they give you the call, then you're out.
Yes, in fact, that's exactly what I said during the job interview. No, I mean, I think, like I said, you got to make the most of every minute that you have in this life on Earth. And I'm loving my new position at SAP Africa as head of innovation. A steep learning curve in terms of moving from research to a global business operation of extensive proportions. So
now, obviously for you, it's not just I want to get away from everything. It's I want to find something. I want to answer a specific question. And in your case, it's life. It's about life.
Yeah, I think life is one of the least understood phenomena in the universe. As living systems on a planet teeming with life, we often forget just how curious and mysterious a phenomenon life is. It may be that there are no other planets in our solar system that host life. So on the one hand, we have a responsibility to protect the diversity of species and the biosphere that we have on this planet. And I believe part of that, and I could go on for hours about the benefits of exploration in terms of understanding the system we're in. But to put it simply, I mean, think of someone who's lived in the same hometown their whole life and doesn't appreciate just what they had there until they left saw another environment and then understood the place they'd come from as an...
I get you, but now the thing is, if we talk about life, I was speaking to an astrophysicist about 3 weeks ago, and we were talking about the whole thing about life, finding it, or signs of it, and he said, you're wasting your time. There's nothing out there. This is it.
That's very pessimistic. Out there is a very huge place. So anyone who claims to know what's out there, I would say take that with a pinch of salt. The universe is huge. And part of my research as before I left research to join SAP was indeed looking for the building blocks of life in space. So we've actually found amino acids floating around in space on comets and in intergalactic interstellar clouds. So these clouds of gases have complex molecules in them, more complex than we thought. And even though the temperatures are very low, amino acids, which are building blocks of proteins, are out there. So I think it would be very premature for us to say that life doesn't exist out there. Our means of looking for it are pretty primitive. Only in the last few decades have we even found planets outside of our solar system, never mind started to look on these planets for evidence of life. So Mars being the next door neighbor planet, having had oceans on it a couple of billion years ago, is a very good place to start looking for what kind of complexity chemistry can take the form of. So whether we find complex molecules but not life itself, or whether we find fossils, or whether we find nothing, this is all very interesting in terms of understanding who we are and our place in the universe.
Now, obviously, you qualified scientifically and in science, to be specific, to go there. But now, obviously, we've seen a lot of dozens of Hollywood movies that tells us what happens when people go to a new planet for the first time. There's always something that goes wrong. So you know, of course, that if something goes wrong, you're dead. I mean, that's reality. No one's going to come, and you can't phone someone to come and help you.
Well, I think we're all going to die someday. The point is what use you make of your time while you're alive. Death is a definite factor for all of us, whether you're in a space craft or on planet Earth. So I think we've become rather comfortable species here on Earth. There's no such thing as the unknown here on Earth. You go to a new city, you've got TripAdvisor, you've got Google Street View, you've got multiple people you know who've been to that city. So I think just a few hundred years ago, things were very different. And a woman once told me her 10-year-old said to her, "Mom, don't be afraid because Adriana's going to go to Mars. What do you think Columbus's mom said when he set off sail to look for a continent to the west?"
But still, moms are moms, parents are parents. And it was odd to me how your mom responded. She just wanted to know if there'll be contact.
Yeah, I think increasingly physical distance is not really a factor in terms of keeping in touch with people that we care about. We live on different continents, we Skype, people keep in touch without being physically in touch. And as we see developments in virtual reality, augmented reality, I think the physical distance between people is becoming less of a factor. So yes, it's a leap to say, you know, so a friend lives in the US and I live in South Africa and we Skype every day, to say I have a family member living on a different planet. But we will have communication, we will stay in touch, and we will put up all of our activities on YouTube, for example, for the world to watch.
Did no family member say to you, "Adriana, we need to talk"? Like this is ridiculous.
No, they've known me my whole life, so you know, they wouldn't dare to tell me. We need to talk.
you know, going like, what? Come on, Adriana. This beautiful planet here, and there's so much, many things we still need to discover. I'm just talking about our oceans, for instance. 70% of our oceans, we have no idea what's going on in there.
Sure, and I deeply hope that there are many humans who take that under under their actions and explore the oceans. I can't do everything, so my part is to go where no one has gone before. Mm. And not everyone has the desire to do such a thing, but I think if we stop exploring, we forget what it is to be human.
So I'm just thinking now, having gone on bad holidays and being stuck with the same people, And it was dreadful to me. I'm just thinking now, the plan is to send four at a time, astronauts at a time. So you're going to be stuck there for a minimum of 2 years with the same people, you know, before the next group arrives.
Sure. So Mars One has spoken about their mission architecture in some detail, but let me add that none of this detail is set in stone. We are simply a private entity, the only one currently, selecting and training crew. We would outsource the technology to other companies. So if we outsource to SpaceX, they plan a mission for 100 at a time and a return mission at that. If we outsource to other companies, we don't know what that architecture will look like. So we've agreed to a one-way trip because in the minimum model, that's what it would be. But in fact, we have no real idea of exactly how many crew will go at a time or when it will happen.
So going back to the danger element again, let's say you're on the surface of Mars, something goes wrong with your suit malfunctions, and you're stuck out there. What's going to happen to you physically? Let's say you're without a suit for some reason.
Well, you'll die in about 30 seconds, yeah. Kind of like when my car broke down on the highway in the middle of the night in between Durban and Pietermaritzburg. I also thought I'd last about 30 seconds and had to walk 5 kilometers in the dark through the sugarcane fields. So technology failing happens everywhere. Yeah,
exactly. So what do you die off?
So the conditions on Mars, I'd say the first thing you'd notice if your suit failed completely, or let's say you were dared to run naked in between one part of the settlement and the other, would you make it? Well, the cold is probably the first thing you'd notice at around negative 50, negative 60. So that's not enough to kill you immediately. But once you waited about 10 seconds and experienced that cold and needed a breath of air, that breath of air would be 96% carbon dioxide. So you'd faint from breathing in that proportion of carbon dioxide and then die of hypothermia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds pleasant. So now, a day in the life of a person on Mars. Now, just sort of practicalities. Take me through the practicalities from literally brushing your teeth to, you know, doing the necessary. What'll you eat, for instance?
Well, so on the way there, I mean, so the trip there would take 6 to 7 months, which is currently the amount of time that astronauts spend in the space station. So that part of the journey would be analogous to what astronauts would do in the space station. Questions about brushing teeth and going to the toilet. So there are plenty of YouTube videos of astronauts in the space station. So those are the kind of facilities that we'd have for that. Very limited. It would be in transit. So we'd be using minimal water, not bathing, doing wet wipe baths, and drinking just like 2.5 liters per person per day.
For the rest of your life?
No, that's the 7 month trip there. So then we arrive on Mars. Then okay. There's gravity. So you can compare any activities that we do on Earth with those on Mars. The food that we eat on the way there would be the astronaut food that's pre-packed. On arrival, we'll start to plant the seeds that we've brought to grow indoor greenhouses. So we've already demonstrated that plants grow in the space station. So we'll grow these plants inside the facility on Mars that will be waiting for us, in fact. So there'll be prefabricated living units on the surface that are already up and running, oxygenated, temperature regulated, pressurized, and the plants would grow in there. Estimated it would take a year or two to get the plant growth enough to feed us in terms of nutrition and kilojoules. So we'd rely on the dehydrated food for some period until we had enough leafy greens and other fruits and so on growing in our indoor greenhouse. Developments on Earth in terms of smart farming are necessary for sustainability on Earth, but on Mars this will be an absolutely crucial to how we survive.
So now, I mean, this is 100% reliant on the four of you working together. If one goes, well, I don't like you people, it's a massive problem.
So the first group will be hugely important. Probably scientifically based in terms of training, so with research backgrounds, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, aeronautical engineering, all of the types of engineering skills will be crucial because we'll be monitoring and maintaining the equipment for the first time. So to ensure some stability in that system, all of us will be working every moment that we're not asleep towards maintaining the structures that are keeping us alive. So we would have trained for decades to get this position. Yes, of course, one person can lose it, but I think we'll have a strong unity of purpose here as people who've dedicated our lives to this cause. Arriving on Mars finally will be the realization of this, and we'll have so many daily tasks to keep us busy.
So what is the cause? What is your cause here?
For me, it's curiosity. Humans have been exploring since day one. I'm envious of the early explorers in terms of being able to literally pack up and put on a backpack or hop in a dugout canoe or jump on a ship to go and explore. What we have to do here takes a lot more investment, both monetary and in terms of the humans required to get this mission off the ground. Thousands of people, hundreds of billions of dollars. But essentially, we're doing what humans have always done, which is to say, what's over that horizon? And I believe it's important that we keep doing that. We're on a crash course here on Earth if we keep overpopulating at an exponential rate, living in the exact same set of resources that we've had, no matter whether we had 1 billion humans or 10 billion humans, we've got the same planet. So we need to expand. We need to keep exploring. We need to develop technologies that are resource efficient, and living on Mars will be super hard. If we manage to do that, there's no excuse for poverty on Earth. And that's an important motivation for me, is to demonstrate that we can survive in harsh environments. Looking at climate change conditions, we will have harsh environments on Earth that are unprecedented and that we are not used to living in. It will not be easy, but the kind of technology that we develop for a very hostile environment like Mars will be immediately applicable on Earth. We'll be solar powered. We'll be using 95% less water to grow our crops because we don't have a lot of water. We'll be recycling every drop of everything that we can, putting it back into the system, living in a resource efficient way that's unprecedented. And this will have application on Earth.
Now, we did a thing on the show where we asked about the little things that you miss when you're overseas. What will you miss when you're on Mars? I'm not talking about the big things. I'm talking about the little things. Like wine, I know you'll miss.
Well, I've already had discussions with several winemakers on how to make wine on Mars, so it's going to be hard, but that's another challenge that I'm going to take on. Beer would be easier, apparently, so we might have to do that for the first few years. Just the busyness. I mean, looking out the window now and seeing the busyness, the birds, the trees, the cars, just the bustle that is associated with a planet that's teeming with life. And that's what I was meaning earlier. You know, sometimes you have to leave your planet to understand just what you had on that planet. So I think what we don't always appreciate about Earth is that there's life here and we don't know whether this exists anywhere else. And I think the lack of respect with which we sometimes act towards life is not a reflection of just how precious and mysterious a phenomenon this is. So I would miss the life, all of the animals, plants, humans that cover this planet. But I think an appreciation for that life will indeed be part of the core, morality around the people living on Mars will be a deep appreciation for everything that we miss on Earth.
And when you get homesick, what's the plan?
Well, virtual reality is fantastic. And I had imagined for several years now, for example, doing a trail run or doing the two oceans in virtual reality on Mars on a treadmill, watching through a camera somebody else who's actually running the race's view of that race. In fact, this is already being done, so I'm quite hopeful now that there will be a range of activities on Earth that we'll participate in remotely.
Now, I've got a couple of questions from kids here. I'd love to ask you questions about Mars. Are you ready for those?
Yes.
Let's have the first one.